Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Kidney Compass, your podcast for navigating clinical trials. I am so excited today to be here in Vienna at the European Renal Association meeting. And our special guest today is Dr. Chi-Kei Chung from the University of Leicester. Chi-Kei, thanks for being here.
It's my pleasure to be here with you, Shiva.
So this has been a really great meeting. We're getting to the end of it. I think for both of us, it's been exciting to see all the new, data being presented in glomerular diseases. Just kind of want to get a sense from you, like, what has been your overall feeling this week? What were some of the top stories that you're taking away from the meeting?
Yep, so I've just been in a KDIGO session where John Barrett, Joachim Verlegger presented, and I think the theme for this Congress has been game changes in nephrology, and there have been some real big advances, I would say game changers, to come in the field of glomerular diseases, especially IgA nephropathy. John Barrett described this slide of only a few years ago there being tumbleweed passing by because of the lack of innovation in nephrology and especially in rare kidney diseases, but really over the past 5 years, as you well know, the field has really exploded with several novel therapies either being approved or very close to approval now. And we've seen some really exciting data from this Congress.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that every time we get a chance, there's more to talk about with IgA nephropathy. There's multiple clinical trials. And then there's been a lot of great, mechanistic data as well that's being presented, biomarker data. What would you say if you had to take away, the top one or two stories on an IgAN from ERA, what would you say were the big ones?
Okay, well, I think we're starting to kind of think of IgA nephropathy now, this new concept of needing to tackle the IgA-mediated causes of nephron loss, as well as the more generic CKD drivers. And certainly, I think one of the big stories from ERA has been data looking at the B-cell modulators. So this is a very novel class of medications that targets primarily the cytokines APRIL or BAFF and APRIL, but also there are drugs that are looking at B cell depletion and anti-CD38 therapies, looking at targeting plasma cells as well. But this week we've seen data released from two anti-APRIL therapies, so notably from the VISIONARY study of sibeprenlimab, which is a monoclonal antibody that targets APRIL, which is a cytokine that specifically targets, which specifically drives class switching of B cells to IgA producing cells and plasma cell survival as well. So we saw the interim analysis results from the global phase 3 study of sibeprenlimab, VISIONARY study, which compares 4 weekly subcutaneous sibeprenlimab versus placebo, and seeing that at 9 months, 40 weeks, there was this very significant reduction of proteinuria, 51.2% placebo-adjusted reduction of proteinuria with sibeprenlimab treatment, which is the largest magnitude of proteinuria reduction we've seen in any phase 3 clinical trial to date, which is really fantastic data. And look at a therapy that is targeting that production of pathogenic IgA. I think alongside that, really the safety data looks very good. The drug seems very tolerable, minimal number of discontinuations, which were evenly split between the treated group and the placebo group as well. So all looking very good, and really looking forward to seeing more biomarker data from that study and longer-term eGFR data as well. I think also we've seen data coming out from zigakibart. This is slightly early in its development, but there has been release of 100-week data from a phase 1/2 single-arm study of zigakibart. This is another anti-APRIL monoclonal antibody that works similarly to sibeprenlimab as well. From that study, they also saw significant reductions in IgA, Gd-IgA levels, and again, importantly, stabilization of eGFR. And that was really out to 100 weeks. And that's been simultaneously published in Kidney International as well. And obviously, just before this Congress, we saw a press release from Vera about atacicept. Again, showing significant proteinuria reductions, this time using an agent that targets both BAFF and APRIL, and BAFF again seems to be an important cytokine in B-cell survival and also has a role in class switching of B-cells to IgA-producing cells. So all looking very promising for this class of therapies, and we eagerly await longer-term EGFR data from these pivotal phase 3 trials.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I think that the B-cell modulation is really the, you know, it's the topic of the year in IgA nephropathy. One of the things I'm sure you get asked all the time is, do we need to target APRIL alone, APRIL and BAFF? How are we going to differentiate if we are so lucky to have multiple therapies available? Do you think that decision-making is going to be driven more by efficacy? Do you think it's going to be, you know, safety issues? As you mentioned, right now, none of these trials have showed any safety signals. Even patients that have been on, you know, zigakibart for 100 weeks, there's 96-week data with atacicept, we're not seeing any increased infection risk. I think, to your point, there's more data to come and looking at subgroups and whatnot. But what are your thoughts about how we're going to differentiate and whether or not we can just target APRIL or we need to target APRIL and BAFF?
I mean, that's a great question. And I think we do have to wait for the phase 3 longer-term EGFR data in order to really make that decision. We need to see, and it could clearly be different for different patients as well. We know IgA nephropathy is a very variable disease. There are some populations who have high APRIL levels, high BAFF levels. Whether, you know, one of these approaches is going to be better for a particular patient compared to another, and we'd need to wait for that two-year EGFR data, longer-term safety data as well, I think, in order to better inform that decision.
You know, I agree, and I think there's so much excitement about what's to come with EGFR data as well. Right now, we're just kind of on the edge of our seat. We've had really great phase 2 data when it comes to EGFR. Whether that's going to translate to the same in the phase 3, of course, remains to be seen. But with the magnitude of proteinuria reduction I think we're seeing, we're certainly hopeful, and obviously the mechanism of action that you've alluded to. So outside of B-cell modulation, there's also been a lot happening here at this meeting in terms of biomarker work that's been done on some of the approved therapies. Do you have anything you want to share with us about, you know, Nefecon, sparsentan, iptacopan, some of the drugs that have been approved already, at least accelerated approval, some with full approval for IgA nephropathy in certain parts of the world? What are some of the new things that we're finding out about these already approved drugs?
Absolutely. So I think there's been interesting data presented on Nefecon. There was a presentation showing that Nefecon had clinical efficacy and a similar magnitude of efficacy despite baseline EGFR when this was a post-hoc analysis of the phase 3 NefIgArd study, showing that even if you're starting NefIgArd at more advanced stages of CKD, so they took different baseline EGFR levels ranging from the 30s right up to above 60, and showed similar magnitude of proteinuria reduction, similar magnitudes of EGFR stability despite baseline characteristics and EGFR points. So I think that's reassuring and indicating that we can expect to achieve similar efficacy in patients with more advanced CKD. With sparsentan, I think there's been some very interesting data as well presented here. There was data from the PROTECT open label extension indicating in the PROTECT study, which was a phase 3 global clinical study of sparsentan versus the active control irbesartan, we have to remember that in the irbesartan arm, around 97% of patients achieved maximum labeled dose of irbesartan, which and we saw that in the PROTECT study, that group on irbesartan progressed very slowly compared to the placebo standard of care arms in other phase 3 clinical trials, where that up-titration of irbesartan was not mandated. And in the analysis presented here, they showed that despite patients being on maximum irbesartan, when they were crossed over to sparsentan in the open-label extension phase, they still achieved very significant proteinuria reductions. around 40% compared to when they were on maximum labeled irbesartan. The other data with sparsentan presented looked at the combination when you add sparsentan on top of SGLT2 inhibitors. So that was the Spartacus study. Again, full presentation here, 48 patients enrolled, looking at 52-week data, showing higher numbers of patients achieving complete remission when you add sparsentan onto patients on optimized RASi and SGLT2 inhibitors. And again, around a 40% reduction in proteinuria as well, indicating that sparsentan is having a complementary effect to SGLT2 inhibitors.
Yeah, it's actually pretty remarkable because I think that, you know, in nephrology, we hadn't been thinking about endothelin antagonism for quite some time. And now there's certainly clear evidence that blocking both endothelin and angiotensin is superior even when added to SGLT2 inhibitors. So maybe that is going to be new standard of care, at least in terms of background therapy or foundational therapy, as some people call it. So I think, you know, I'll just end with very excited that you're going to be presenting some more data on the Spartan trial next week at the ISGD podocyte meeting. Anything you want to share with us about the Spartan trial, the design? I think it's a very unique study, and kudos to you all and your team for really having the vision of designing a study like this. Can you share with us a little bit about what exactly Spartan is and why it's such a, you know, unique study and adds a lot to our understanding of this mechanism?
So I think as we are getting access to new therapies, we have to really fully understand how they're working as well. I think, you know, with B-cell modulators, we know that they reduce levels of IgA, Gd-IgA1, but are they having an intrarenal anti-inflammatory effect as well on perhaps intrarenal B cells? We know from complement inhibitors, they act on glomerular inflammation, but are they having an effect on the tubular interstitial fibrosis and inflammation as well? And we designed the Spartan study to really have an in-depth look at sparsentan in patients who are not on renin-angiotensin system inhibitors before, but really doing a deep dive into different biomarkers, histological changes, so taking a baseline kidney biopsy, enrolling patients very close to that, and then doing a repeat kidney biopsy as well to see on a tissue level what effect sparsentan is having, because we know that has beneficial hemodynamic effects, but also we know that the endothelin system plays a significant role on many kidney cell types, mesangial cells, podocytes, tubular interstitial cells, infiltrating immune cells, and so on. So we really wanted to have a look at a tissue level of what is going on, and we hope to present some of our findings next week.
Oh, we're super excited. Well, you know, in the interest of time, I'm going to let Dr. Chung off on his day, but thank you so much, CK, for your time and for sharing some of your highlights from the ERA meeting. Well, that's all for now, but thank you all for tuning in. Please check us out at HCP Live, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, and we look forward to seeing you soon.